Rita raised her eyebrows. Daisy tried to explain. Dance trained her to be fearless of physical pain and struggle, and to recognize the gulf between difficult and impossible. Ballet favors not only the brave, but the smart. No stupid girls are in ballet. It was the motto of Daisy's Russian teachers at Gladwin Ballet, usually shouted as a hand slapped your butt after a careless mistake, sometimes muttered under the breath as trembling limbs were shoved into alignment, even spoken affectionately with a pinch on your inner thigh that pushed your extension into something you didn't even know possible. Marie Delamici didn't subscribe to such corporal teaching methods, but she was no less demanding, and not averse to an occasional shouted harangue when her students got lazy. Fortunately, her language restrictions took some of the sting out. She ignored the pecking order unless it became an unacceptable distraction. Her job was to teach, and the students could sort themselves out. Will said Marie might have been testing me, Daisy said. Another thing about ballet, if a teacher is hard on you, it means they care. Marie cast me in the prelude for a reason. I didn't want to let her down, so I dug in and went to work. Maybe that's why I said yes to David when he asked me out. This was before you met Eric? A month, maybe 6 weeks before, Daisy said. During the time, I was so tired, lonely, and distracted. Maybe I didn't handle David as well as I could. What do you mean? Maybe I said yes because I didn't have the energy to tactfully say no. Or because I wanted some validating attention. Rita's smile was soft as she shook her head. Nothing wrong with that. Will suggested we double date, go out as a foursome, but David objected for some reason. Stories in my head.
I got no objection to Will, David said. Shit, the guy gets more pussy than the ASPCA. He probably goes with men just to get a break.
Daisy didn't quite know how to answer.
You sleep with him yet?
Silverware frozen in hand, she looked at him. This is charm, right? Clarify for me because I think it's charm, but your accent is hard to understand.
Actually, it wasn't.
Will's Canadian accent and slang were sometimes sludgy in her ears, while David, who was born in Belgium, spoke perfectly decent continental French.
It's curiosity, he said.
But if you know I'm a virgin, and you do, then why ask if I've slept with Will? If you're curious, ask why I haven't slept with anyone.
Or if you're ballsy, ask if I'll sleep with you. Will you sleep with me?
No. His smile didn't waver, yet his face changed, as if a mask dropped, or a single-celled layer of skin melted away, revealing beneath it a gentler, more thoughtful David.
Will said you didn't bullshit easily, he said.
She smiled and returned her attention to the plate, twirling a careful portion of linguine against her spoon. It was hard enough eating pasta neatly, even harder with a boy staring at you like you were his dessert. David was a brisk eater. He set his fork and knife neatly across the empty plate and pushed it away.
Anyway, I don't know many virgins.
You make it sound like I'm an albino or some other genetic rarity.
Well, you must have had boyfriends.
Why? She said behind her fork, chewing.
Because you're fucking gorgeous.
But I could be a total bitch.
Doesn't matter.
The pretty girls always have sex?
Speaking from my observational experience? Yes.
She finished chewing, looking across the table at him. Compared to sparring verbally with Will, which felt like a tango, this was fencing, moving blindly backward as she kept up a parry to his thrusts. She tried a soft riposte. I've had boyfriends, and since you're curious and buying me dinner, I'll tell you I'm not all that blank of a slate.
He smiled. I'd love to fill it in.
His words filled her face with a swift heat. His manner was bold, but she couldn't deny a small part of her was flattered by it. Attention was attention. So she smiled back. Listen, you want to take me out to get laid, then I'm not your girl.
I never said that.
But you're not saying much else.
What do you want to talk about?
Anything but sex. She looked at her watch. 3 minutes about you. Go. He rearranged the salt and pepper shakers, thinking.
I love music, he said,
running his fingertips around the rim of his water glass.
Both my parents were classical musicians.
Daisy went still. She knew David was an orphan, but not the circumstances of his parents' death. She looked up to meet his eyes, but he was looking down now, playing with his spoon, fiddling with the latch at the gate of his most private self.
"Music talks to me," he said. "It makes me tell stories in my head. It was how I dealt with a lot of things when I was young. Know what I mean?"
She nodded, wishing he would stop fidgeting.
"Go on," she said quietly. "The first time I saw you dance, I was watching a class and Marie was having you do something to the music from Nutcracker, the second act, pas de deux."
He hummed the descending notes of the Grand Adagio in a voice that was soft but right on tune.
"I love that theme. My mother told me a story about it. Someone bet Tchaikovsky he couldn't compose a piece using the notes of a scale in order. They assumed ascending order. But Tchaikovsky, being a genius, chose descending, and the result was the Nutcracker Adagio. The rest of the score gives me cavities, but that piece always makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck."
"My ballet teachers told me a different story," Daisy said. "Tchaikovsky's sister died while he was writing the score, and the Adagio's sadness is in tribute to her. The descending scale is her death haunting him." David pointed the spoon at her, mouth slightly open.
"I knew it," he said. "I knew you knew that story. The way you were dancing. Everyone else was bringing the sweetness, but you tapped into the sadness. I knew you knew."
"It has a righteous anger to it, too. Toward the end, when he brings in all the brass and lets rip, he's pissed, shaking his fist at the sky and cursing God."
"Yes."
His eyes held hers, filled with a pleased wonder. The moment flickered warm between them. A small, complicit campfire. Then it was as if David became aware of the taste of vulnerability in his mouth, and he gave the spoon in his hand a tiny toss. It plonked onto the table and bounced onto the rim of Daisy's plate. It was a defiant gesture, and his cocky expression was back as he glanced up at her.
"I have a bad habit of falling in love with dancers," he said, grinning.
"What do you like about us?"
"The flexibility."
She touched her tongue to the inside of her cheek and raised her eyebrows.
"What I don't like would be a shorter list," David said.
"Do you dance?"
He laughed. "No."
"What do you do?" Over the rim of his water glass, his eyebrows wrinkled.
"Is this curiosity or your cocktail hour conversation?"
She put her chin on the heel of her hand. "What do you love?" He tapped the base of the glass on the table, shaking the ice cubes.
"I love the 5-minute call," he said, after a moment. "All the action before the show finally starts. I like the little pause when my hands are on the rope of the curtain, and I hold the whole thing, captive. It doesn't start until I pull. I love that last moment. I love being in line for something, and it's not yet my turn, but I'm next."
"Why?"
"Because everyone wants to be me right then. Lucky bastard, he's next."
"What else?"
"I love the moment before you kiss someone new. The almost kiss. You know it's going to happen, but hanging tight with your faces together and not kissing? It's my definition of magic."
"He likes to get there," Daisy realized. "Not be there."
"Did I make it?"
he asked, taking her wrist and looking at her watch. "Close enough."
"Can I kiss you?"
She hated when boys asked beforehand, and what exactly was he planning to do if she said yes? Plant his hands between the plates and lean over the table to her? She smiled into her pasta. "Maybe." He took his time letting go of her arm, and she noticed he wore rings on both his index fingers. One was dull silver and textured, the other plain gold. When she asked, he took the silver one off and handed it to her with a little shake, which seemed to make it fall apart. She saw it was a puzzle. 5 separate bands that fit together in one. She attempted to put it back together as he lit a cigarette and watched her.
"It was my father's."
"Oh?"
"And this," he said, pointing to the gold ring, "was his wedding band."
"What happened?" she asked.
"Car accident. He and my mother together."
"I'm so sorry."
He shrugged.
"How old were you?"
11.
She couldn't solve the puzzle. He took it back. Elbows on the table, eyes squinted against the cigarette clamped in his mouth, he put the rings together in 10 seconds.
"Took me about a month to crack it," he said, shaking it apart again and putting it in her hand.
When did you come to the States?
Right afterward.
Was there no family in Belgium who could take care of you?
My mom was an orphan. She only had one sister, Helen, who lived in New York. My dad was the youngest of 8 children. He was an afterthought. You know, 7 kids, then 10 years go by, and oops.
Surprise.
So when he and my mom died, my father's parents were alive, but they were old. And all his siblings were older, too. Older and scattered. Only one of his sisters was still in Belgium, and she wasn't even in Brussels. I was going to be uprooted no matter what, and my parents must have had the foresight to realize it. In their will, they made Aunt Helen my legal guardian. It was never contested.
A bitterness in David's tone made Daisy wonder if he resented nobody fighting to keep him in Europe. With an exasperated sigh, she gave the ring back. I can't do it. David's expression was thoughtful as he reassembled the ring and slid it onto his finger. He was cute, and when he calmed down, held still, and showed himself, he was actually interesting.
Want to go somewhere else?
He asked. No, thank you. I had a good time, but I'm kind of tired, and I have class tomorrow. Little was said on the drive back to campus. He held her hand as he drove, and it felt phony. His attraction to her sat in her lap. So did the certainty he'd want to kiss her goodnight.
So quiet, he said, squeezing her fingers. What are you thinking about?
Nothing, really, she said, wondering if going with a slightly stretched truth, I don't kiss on the first date, was the best tactic. She considered a fake coughing fit or cooking up a scratchy throat.
The quiet ones are always wild in the dark.
Is that also your observational experience?
Personal experience.
A cold sore would be ideal right now.
Is your roommate around?
David asked, as he walked her to her dorm. I don't have one, Daisy said absently.
Oh?
David was a master at putting 7 kinds of innuendo into 1 syllable.
How'd you pull that ideal situation off?
Inwardly, Daisy kicked herself for the slip. I had one, but she left school.
And now you have the swingle.
Well, I'm not getting too used to it. I'm sure housing will transfer someone in, if I don't find a new roommate myself first.
Well, don't hurry.
They walked the rest of the way in silence. It was a weird, humid night, with a drizzle that couldn't make up its mind whether it wanted to be rain or mist. With David's arm around her shoulders, Daisy was painfully aware of how the rules had been ratcheted up a notch. She was on her own. No curfew or school night excuse as a safety net. No, my father will kill me. And no roommate to blame. Not even a fake one, thanks to her idiocy. I had a good time, she said, glancing up at the skies as the rain started coming down heavier. I'll see you around Mallory tomorrow.
He nodded. Can I kiss you?
I don't know, she said. Can you? A long, staring moment. And then his hand slid around her face and tilted it up to his. His eyebrows and eyelashes were wet. His face came closer, and he rolled his lips in, then out. A hesitant, almost shy gesture, and for an instant, it made her toes curl in her shoes. She understood how he loved the almost kiss. The moment before his lips touched hers was magic. Then his mouth opened, and his tongue slid against hers, and it was all wrong. He felt wrong. He tasted wrong. He kissed wrong. Good night, she said, half backing and half ducking away, pretending she didn't see his disappointed expression, feeling 17, foolish, and virginal. Blind and stupid. Though her major was ballet, as a BFA candidate and a Brighton scholar, Daisy had to study contemporary dance as well. In this arena, the classroom atmosphere was warm and supportive. It was with her own body Daisy found herself fighting an entirely different battle. All her experience with modern dance had been fleeting. A class here, a workshop there. She never pretended it was her forte, and may have subconsciously thumbed her nose at it by maintaining a certain pretty lyricism in her movements. Always a bunhead first. Now she was faced with modern technique 5 times a week, naked feet to the floor, and on the other side of her body's equator where everything was opposite to ballet. Legs and hips turned in instead of out, arms thrown at angles instead of curves, working on the plane of the floor as well as the air.
Floor is ugly, said one of Daisy's teachers at Gladwin Academy. Ballerina only touch floor when necessary. Only lie on floor if sleeping princess or dead swan. Floor dirty, not pretty.
Now, in Cornelis Justi's modern class, pretty had an entirely new definition. Plus, Daisy's body was finding new ways to define pain. Muscles she didn't know she possessed bitched and moaned. Dancing barefoot was making the calloused skin on her toes split into deep horizontal cracks. Dirt got into the cracks and wouldn't let them heal. Clutching at the floor with these pained, uncertain feet gave her a nasty case of shin splints.
Those will pass, Cornelis said. A little more time and your feet will stop trying to do all the work.
Everyone at Lancaster Conservatory, male, female, straight, gay, or in between, was in love with Cornelis. Everyone lived for the tiny rite of passage when they were invited to use his diminutive name.
Call me Case.
It rhymed with lace.
Or Kestia, but only if we're dating.
He was the most gigantic person Daisy ever encountered. His tall frame and broad shoulders gobbled up the studio floors. He moved like a hurricane, even when demonstrating from a chair. He ate life and spit out the bones. Unlike the scatterbrained Marie, he knew every student by name. And his greetings in basso profundo echoed throughout Mallory.
William, my friend.
Good morning, Christine.
Look who's here. Daisy, our little flower.
Born and raised in Amsterdam, he could converse, joke, and curse in several languages. Prior to Lancaster, he taught for a spell at Louisiana State University. A bit of an evangelic twang had accompanied him to Philadelphia.
Will you look what the good Lord hath brought to me?
He cried when he saw you in the halls, scooping you up in a rib-crushing embrace as if only you existed for him at that moment. He was a happy creature, a shaken and stirred cocktail of black and gay, cultured and cosmopolitan, down home and up in the stars, poured out into as many shot glasses as he could afford and thrown back, l'chaim, with an unapologetic belch before he sent his glass smashing into the fireplace. Daisy adored his classes, though she often felt hopeless there. Hopeless and helpless. Her feet continued to clutch the floor while her limbs wrapped around the unfamiliar technique and failed. Case chased her across the studio in combinations.
Bigger,
he said in his booming voice, breathing down her neck.
Bigger. More. Be sloppy. Fall down.
She sucked at sloppy. The older modern students patted her shoulder sympathetically. Tutu lock, they called it. She laughed, even as the frustration gummed up her throat and tears threatened the back of her eyes. This upset her more than the whispers and sneers from the ballet girls. Case was implacable. He kept her after class, patiently worked alone with her, trying to exercise the ballerina's marrow deep need for perfection.
Quit wiping your hands off on your tights, he said. It's dirt, but it's washable. Come on, try again. I don't care what it looks like, Daisy. I care what it feels like. Give me a mess. Show me ugly and hungry, then you can show me perfect.
One day, he blindfolded her before a combination, only with a light piece of gauzy material, but it was enough to her small comfort zone. She could just perceive light and dark, walls and floor. It wasn't enough. With no visual cues, no depth perceptions, she was terrified. Not only was she going to fail, but she was going to fall down. On the dirty floor. Her body stiffened in a primal attempt to survive.
Follow my voice, Kay said in front of her,
and slightly to the side.
Don't be afraid, and if you start to fall, the floor will catch you. Make friends with the floor. Trust your body, Daisy. It knows where it is.
She was alone with Case in the studio. Even the classroom percussionists had left. She breathed in and dropped her shoulders. Like a horse switching at a fly, she flicked off her fear. It was dancing. She had nothing to fear. Case wanted a mess. He wanted her stupidity, her mistakes, her dirty hands, and everything else the Russian mafia swatted her ass for. He could have them. She lifted her arms and moved into the silent space. A blind idiot. She reached for the movement, but at the last second decided to let the movement reach for her instead and not give a fuck what happened. And something happened. Her body seemed to peel open. The not caring anymore spilled from somewhere beneath her sternum and exploded out into the dark.
That's it,
Kay said.
Beautiful. More.
She understood. The dance wasn't a jacket to stuff her limbs into and make fit. It was a jacket that would self-tailor to whatever emotional color she wanted. But the emotion had to come first. Good, bad, and ugly. And even ugly could be beautiful. She was dancing full out and fearless now, coming out of a turning leap and following the momentum downward. The floor put up its dirty hands and caught her, counterbalanced her rolling weight, and pushed her back onto her bare feet. She did the step again, did it bigger, did it too big, pushing the limit and breaking the rules. Reckless and imperfect, borne on invisible hands of feeling, pushing from behind and pulling from ahead.
Yes, Case cried. Will you look at this girl?
One of his hands was gentle on the back of her neck. The other peeled away the blindfold, and he brought her to a stop, picked her up, and twirled her.
Oh, my dear, you are going to be something else,
he said. Courage to be a mess. I find that so interesting, Rita said. The courage it took for you to be a mess. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done in dance, Daisy said. Learn to let go of pretty. But it changed everything. By the end of my freshman year, I was a completely different dancer. Rita nodded slowly. You look on the verge of an epiphany, Daisy said. I keep coming back to the courage to be a mess, she said, and I wonder if you allowed yourself to fall apart after the shooting. I did. I was a mess. Daisy looked around, confused. That's why I'm here. What I mean is, I'm sorry, I'm trying to articulate something that's still forming in my mind and not doing a good job. Let me table it for a bit. She scribbled something in her notebook. You go on. Daisy sighed. I forgot what I was saying. Rita went on writing. I'm all over the place, Daisy said. I'm talking about everything but Eric. But I didn't meet him until November. God, I haven't even told you about Lucky. Rita looked up. You don't have to present me with a perfect story arc, she said. You're not here to entertain me. You can give me the ugly mess. Daisy laughed. If I have the courage. Pretty princesses in tutus. The shin splints worsened, and Daisy was sent to Mallory Hall's training room for treatment. She reclined on one of the padded tables, heating pads on both legs. Next in line for ultrasound therapy, she was trying to get some reading done for American literature, but the words kept swimming in front of her eyes. Yawning, she rested the book open on her chest. On the table next to her, Aisha Johnson had her nose in a magazine and an ice pack on her Achilles tendon. She was the other recipient of that year's Brighton Scholarship and a rising star in the contemporary division. Her six-foot sculpted body gave off an energy and presence that made Daisy back up a few steps in class. She watched Aisha with half awe and half despair, wanting to emulate something she could barely define. They were friendly in class, but not friends. Aisha was fierce, proud, and independent. Her circle was predominantly black, and her loyalty pledged to only a select few. She always held her face like an immutable facade, yet often snuck wisecracks out a side door. Daisy liked Aisha's dry humor and had extended a few overtures, all politely received, but not returned. Daisy retreated with no hard feelings and accepted the benign neglect.
Everyone has a social bell curve, her father said once. And sometimes, you are nothing more to a person than scenery, neither cherished nor detested. Don't take it personally.
One of the other student trainers came to Daisy's side. How we doing here? She said. The royal we. Already I'm talking like a nurse. We forgive you, Daisy said. The trainer laughed. She was short, with a Southern Belle's hoop skirt figure. Her blonde hair exploded from her scalp in crazy spiral curls, some of which were captured in a hair elastic at her nape, while the rest bounced around her face. She took the heating pads off Daisy's shins and started pressing gentle but competent fingertips up the length of muscle lying against the bone. Daisy pulled a quick, concentrated breath into her nose.
"Be brave," Aisha said.
"Jesus,"
Daisy said, wincing. "I'm sorry," the trainer said. "This is the injury that makes the athletes cry. You dancers are so much tougher."
One of her hands took Daisy's ankle while the other flexed and pointed the foot, letting the shin muscles stretch and contract. She put the heating pads back on and gave Daisy's legs a reassuring pat.
"Ultrasound machine will be free in about 5 more minutes. Let's keep them warm."
"Yes, let's," Daisy said.
Smiling, the trainer reached toward the chair where Daisy had set her dance bag. She found one of Daisy's point shoes. Daisy nodded permission, and the blonde girl drew it out.
"I love these," she said quietly, smoothing the satin with her fingertips. "What little girl doesn't dream of pretty princesses in tutus?"
Aisha turned a page of her magazine.
"Ballet broke my heart."
"It breaks a lot of hearts," Daisy said.
"Being black was strike one," Aisha said. "Then I was 6 feet tall in 8th grade, and point class was my nemesis. I don't have the feet for ballet."
She extended one muscular leg.
"What's wrong with your feet?" the trainer said, eyebrows wrinkled. "They don't point," Aisha said.
She was extending her toes as much as possible, but her foot didn't curve.
"Ugly enough bare. And point shoes, they're horrendous. Not like hers."
She flipped her thumb to Daisy's feet. Daisy pointed them, a ripple from ankle to taped toes, the backs of her legs not stirring from the tabletop. Her feet curved until her toes touched the vinyl upholstery, perfectly lined up with her heels. Twin arched tunnels you could roll a matchbox car through.
"I hate you,"
Aisha said. She put her magazine back up, excusing herself from the conversation. The trainer was still looking at the point shoe with a reverent expression.
"God, I wanted ballet lessons so bad when I was little."
"Did you get them?" Daisy asked.
"No, my mother said I was too fat and too much of a klutz."
The girl's voice was conversational, stating a fact and not looking for pity. Daisy studied the face under swinging, wheat-colored curls, its wide cheekbones and pointed chin, the line of tiny studs up one earlobe, and a single silver ring through the ear's cartilage. Her hands weren't klutzy, nor was she fat. Daisy smiled at her.
"I'm Daisy," she said.
"Flatfoot over here is Aisha." "Up yours, bunhead," Aisha said from behind the pages, not unkindly. "I'm lucky," the trainer said.
Daisy tilted her chin.
"Why?"
A triangular grin unfolded, wrinkling the blonde girl's nose.
"My name's Lucia," she said. "Lucia Dare. Lucky for short."
An open-ended pursuit. "Lucky became my closest friend," Daisy said. "My roommate for the rest of college, and still my best friend today. Aisha was... she was never my best friend, but she was an ally. I knew she'd be there, if I needed her. Taylor Revell and I began to get tight, both in class and outside the theater. It slowly started to turn around." She stared down at her hands, remembering Taylor's gray eyes under her thick blonde bangs, taking in the world over her knitting. A high-strung girl, Taylor was never without a skein of yarn or her needles. Knitting kept her anxieties grounded, the repetition of needle through and yarn around soothing her whirling thoughts into peace. "Knit one, purl two," Taylor would chant to the stitches. "Don't forget, I love you." Aisha Johnson, tall and proud, the unruffled apex of the social bell curve, neither friend nor foe, neither cherished nor detested. Yet before every performance, she and Daisy put their palms and foreheads together and whispered, "Merde," for good luck. "Besides Will," Daisy said, "I often danced with this other freshman boy, Manuel Sabena. We had choreography and composition classes together. He was little, 5'5", the same as me, which is short for a male dancer. He couldn't partner me the way Will did, couldn't lift me over his shoulders or do all the showy throwing and catching. But we'd hear music and have identical visions of how it would translate into movement. And we developed our own way of partnering that was based on mutual strength and a much more grounded style, showy floor work instead of air work. The creative aspect of my art began to open up and develop. Plus, All the ways Case was teaching me to be more raw and unrefined and nakedly passionate with my dancing, those are the things I was able to work on when I danced with Manuel. Like we were lab partners, if that makes any sense. It's hard to explain.
Well, what I'm hearing you say is you found your tribe, Rita said.
I did. Daisy picked at the fringe on her favorite pillow. I found them, but then I lost them. Aisha, Taylor, and Manuel were all killed in the theater.
And Marie, Rita said, your teacher. I'm sure she was your good friend by that time as well.
Yes.
I'm so sorry, Daisy. It must have been devastating. I can't imagine.
Daisy nodded, chewing her bottom lip. I still have Lucky, she said. She lives in Fort Lee and works in the Bronx. We see each other as much as we can. Will's in Europe now, dancing with the Frankfurt Ballet.
What about David?
I don't know where he is.
Was he in your tribe?
He was, but he fluctuated between the extreme ends of the bell curve. He was moody as hell and a terrible tease. Then he had moments when he was chill and approachable and let his guard down. We could speak French together. We had the theater in common. I didn't dislike him, but I didn't want to date him. And I don't know. I tried to be kind about it. Nothing you can say makes it easier when you're rejecting someone, but I couldn't keep going on dates and letting him think something was going to come of it.
From the way you described David, maybe he would have enjoyed an open-ended pursuit, Rita said, smiling.
You may be right, Daisy said. He got off on the chase. He wanted things so badly, and then he'd toss them aside. He liked getting there, not being there. Anyway, he took it hard when I said I wanted to be friends, and that's when he started calling me Marge.
Rita raised her eyebrows. Marge?
Oh, from Marguerite?
Yeah. I let him. I didn't like it, but fine. Call me Marge. It'll be our little thing. And I learned to ignore his moods. Ignore when he'd get a smarmy look on his face if he saw me talking to a guy. It was a lot of passive bullshit, nothing overtly mean. But one night I was out with my girlfriends and I met this guy. God, what was his name? Ryan? Rob? Rob, I think. It doesn't matter. It was a random meet. Our groups merged and it was on. Rob and I were talking and flirting and digging each other, and David happened by. He was drunk and belligerent and made a scene. Daisy crossed her arms, hugging the pillow and remembering. It got ugly.
Vested interest.
Is he your boyfriend?
Rob said.
No, Daisy said, her face burned with anger and embarrassment.
Look, maybe I can see you another time. Let me go handle this.
Rob looked over her shoulder with wrinkled eyebrows.
Are you sure? He looks pretty shit-faced.
I'm sure. I'd actually appreciate it. My friends are with me. I'll be fine.
All right. It was nice talking to you.
Yeah, sorry about this.
Not at all.
Rob walked away, looked back once, and waved.
Don't feel bad, David yelled after him. I couldn't bust that cherry either.
Jesus, Dave, Lucky said. Come on, let's go, Taylor said. Daisy started to step off the curb, but the light was red. She was trapped. She stepped back, staring through the passing traffic. As David approached, she closed her eyes, breathing slowly through her nose. Don't engage. She opened her eyes, and the street scene was blurred and trembling. And don't cry. She felt all at once lonely and tired and depleted. Wanting her mother came like a punch to the gut, which made her feel like a baby. She bit down on the inside of her lip and didn't move.
Marge.
David was beside her now, despite the efforts of Taylor and Lucky to thwart him. His hand pulled at her elbow.
Marge. Daisy, I'm sorry.
She turned her head slightly from his fruity breath and cigarette scent. Go away, David, she said. He tried to take both her arms. She kept her hands in her pockets and stepped away. David, please don't touch me. He followed. In her face, babbling apologies in French and pulling at her. Dude, knock it off, Lucky said. You've upset her enough. Come on, honey, be nice, Taylor said, putting an arm around him, playing good cop. He bucked backward, pushing Taylor away. David, Lucky cried. Daisy felt her eyes widen, and her hands came out of her pockets. She planted them in David's chest, and she shoved him hard.
"What is wrong with you?"
she said, her voice raised and echoing down the street. He grabbed her wrists. She dug her heels and pulled out of his grasp. He released her, and she skipped backward, fell flat on her ass. "I hate you," she thought, and the tears spilled down her face. Strong hands scooped under her armpits then, and she was being picked up and put on her feet as a voice spoke over her head.
"Evening, ladies."
It was Will, tall and fresh in jeans and a tight black shirt, his hair down and a crackling, sexy energy in his stance. He brushed off Daisy's back.
"Your tailbone all right?"
he said. She nodded, smearing the heel of her hand across her eyes.
"Let me handle this."
Will tucked her beneath his tattooed arm and sauntered with her over to Dave.
"What's up, asshole? What do you want, faggot?" "Hey, hey," Will's voice was mild. "Don't get all pissy with me. Why don't you and your boyfriend get lost?"
Daisy looked back and saw Matt Lombardi, one of the senior dancers who was apparently out with Will tonight. He flicked his brows up and rolled his eyes.
"Why don't you explain why you're shoving girls around?"
Will's hand rested strong on the back of Daisy's neck, and her heart began to slow down.
"I wasn't shoving her. Looked like it to me. I don't like seeing that shit, Dave. Least of all with my partner. I happen to have a vested interest in her ass." "Yeah, I know where your interest in asses is vested, Kager."
Lucky came by Daisy's other side and threaded a possessive arm with hers. David had his back and the sole of his one foot against a lamp post, lighting a cigarette. Will's arm slid from Daisy's shoulder, and he took a step toward David, but then stopped and looked back, not at Daisy, but beside her.
"Hi, I'm Will," he said.
"I'm Lucky." A breeze came down the street and blew Will's hair back from his face. His bottom lip retreated a fraction, then his smile unfolded.
"So am I,"
he said, painfully beautiful under the streetlights. Lucky's expression was unreadable, but her fingers curled like talons into Daisy's forearm. Will turned back to David.
"Come on, man. You should go home. Don't tell me what to do." "I'm not. I'm just giving you some advice. Can I bum one of those?"
"Jesus,"
David muttered, but he reached back in his inside pocket.
"I brought my own,"
Matt said, sidling up and lighting up.
"Great," David said, exhaling smoke. "The hags and the fags. What a banner fucking night."
Will leaned back from the trio and looked at Daisy.
"Go home," he mouthed.
He pointed at Lucky with a you-go-with gesture. The girls moved a few steps away.
"Daisy, I'm sorry," David said.
Daisy looked back. He was between Matt and Will's shoulders, trying to follow her, but they were having none of it.
"Tell her tomorrow,"
Matt said.
"Yeah, apologies are better given sober, man."
"Come on, children," Taylor said. "Let's find a party." But Daisy had lost interest in the evening. "I'm going home."
"Yeah, I'm done too,"
Lucky said, patting back a fake yawn. Taylor shrugged, kissed them, and set out alone, her chin out, long stride and boots echoing clackety-thump, clackety-thump behind her.
"Oh my God,"
Lucky said, still squeezing Daisy's arm.
"Oh my God, who is he?"
"He is Will.
Did you feel it? Am I crazy? Did you feel that chemistry?"
"I felt it," Daisy said.
"Jesus,"
Lucky said, looking back over her shoulder once more.
"The way he took control of the situation without throwing his dick around? It was hot. David was eating out of his hand.
He's got a charm."
"You all right? How's your ass?"
"My ass is fine, and I'm pissed off." "Let's go get a Sara Lee cake. Take it back to your room and get fat." Daisy shook her head.
"I have a costume fitting tomorrow."
"Ugh, you dancers."
"Fine, I'll get one, and you can watch me get fat." As a consolation, Daisy got herself an ice cream sandwich. It soothed for about 5 minutes, and then she was chilled off. Back in her room, she pulled on her warmest sweats and flopped face down on her bed.
"I hate boys."
Lucky cut a generous slice of chocolate cake. "David is not all boys. Clearly he's nuts about you, but he can't hold his emotional liquor, which is not sexy." She licked her fingers. "Will, on the other hand..." Daisy rolled on her elbow.
You've got him in your crosshairs. God, he is sexy. But what was all David's gay blather? Is that an inside joke?
I hear it a lot, Daisy said. That he bats for both sides.
You've seen or only heard?
Only heard. The consensus is he's straight with a slight bend.
Lucky carefully ran the blunt side of the icing-encrusted knife along her tongue.
What's your thought?
He's comfortable in anyone's company. An equal opportunity flirt.
Actually, no, I take that back. I wouldn't call him a flirt. He's not an attention seeker, and nothing he does is for shock value. He is who he is, and honestly doesn't give a shit what other people think.
Interesting, Lucky said, setting the lid on the tin and folding the foil edges down.
Straight with a slight bend and no fucks to give.
Would it bother you if he were bisexual?
No.
Sitting on the floor, ankles crossed, her arms stretched wide along the iron bed frame, Lucky looked both sated and hungry.
He could sleep with trees for all I care. I just want to taste his tattoos.
Daisy laughed, rolling onto her back.
You don't mind me going after him, do you?
Mind? No, he's my partner. And not to dismiss your crush, but he's not really my type.
What is your type?
Daisy opened her mouth, stuck for an answer when a knock sounded at the door.
Come in.
It was Will. Just checking that everyone's ass is accounted for, he said.
Speaking of which, where's David?
Lucky asked.
Passed out. No longer a threat to society.
Is he always such a douche? Lucky said, tossing her curls back.
He's an orphan, Daisy said, and Will glanced over at her, nodding, his expression thoughtful.
That's how I look at it, too, he said. He wants to be loved, he just has a terrible way of asking for it.
Well, thanks for coming to the rescue, Daisy said. Your timing was perfect, as usual.
Will's broad shoulders shrugged. I could have kicked his ass, but I wanted to spare him the humiliation. I'm kind of stupid that way.
Hey, is that cake?
It is, Lucky said, getting up. And I need to get it into my fridge. She put the cake box into Will's hand and shrugged into her jacket. As if they'd been acquainted for years, Will reached to help with a sleeve. His eyes slid up and down her back. He looked hungry as well.
Want me to walk you home?
He said. Lucky winked at Daisy. Turning around, she drew her hair out from beneath her collar and took the box from Will.
Sure.
Oh, boy, Daisy thought, but said nothing as she lifted her face, first for Lucky's kiss, then Will's.
Bonne nuit,
Will said.
Du rêve.
C'est la vie, Lucky said.
It's a start, Will said, and the door closed.
Food and Friendship. The next morning, Mallory Hall's costume department was a zoo.
Can you come back in an hour?
The frazzled wardrobe mistress asked Daisy.
Three of my slaves called in sick. It's not even Mardi Gras.
Dancers knew it wasn't wise to be disagreeable with the woman who handled your costume. Daisy assured her it was no trouble and headed over to the campus center to get some breakfast. She saw David sitting in a booth. Plugged into his Walkman, he was hunched over a styrofoam cup, as though judging whether it could hold the weight of his head. No other tables were free. Without thinking twice, she slid into the bench opposite David and gave him a small smile. He looked like hell, his wet hair combed straight back from his face, revealing bloodshot eyes, a tremor in his hands as they reached up and took off the earphones.
Hi.
His voice was sludgy, and he cleared his throat. She smiled again, blew on her hot tea, and took a careful sip. What are you listening to?
Beethoven. Helps with a hangover.
Does it?
No.
She held out her hand, and he gave her the earphones. He rewound the tape a little and hit the play button. Cellos and violas filled her ears, a somber two-note ostinato repeating, unfolding into a theme. Simple, like the tune to a child's nursery rhyme. The theme was handed off to the violins, and a second variation played under it. The phrases wound together like two dancers. She took one earpiece away.
What is this?
Second movement of the Seventh Symphony.
It's beautiful, she said. When one theme plays on top of the other, it's so simple, but it's...
A string of beauties hand in hand, David said.
Her eyes widened. Yes.
Someone famous said that. I don't remember who. Christ, my head.
He lit a cigarette and slid the pack across to her. After a few more measures, she stopped the tape and put the earphones back on the table.
My parents loved the Seventh,
he said in French, running his fingers along the edge of the Walkman. You said they were musicians. He nodded.
In the Orchestre National de Belgique. My father played cello, my mom the violin. They used to play the second movement all the time, or sing it, sing all the parts.
He put the cigarette in his mouth and ran both hands through his thick hair, exhaled a ribbon of smoke and flicked the ashes.
Yesterday was the anniversary of the car accident.
I see, she said. I'm sorry.
I should know better than to go out in public. I usually hole up alone or something.
You shouldn't be alone, she said. He shrugged. I'm glad you told me. He looked over her shoulder, smoking.
I'm sorry I was a dick,
he said softly.
I hope I didn't ruin anything you had going on. It's just, you smell like sugar, and you're the prettiest thing I've ever seen in my damn life, and I don't know why it makes me act like such an asshole.
She smiled. Could I see the ring again? He slid it off, shook apart the silver bands, and handed it to her. Do you have any pictures of your parents? She asked.
Sure.
Will you show me sometime? From under the visor of his hand, he looked up at her. Slowly he nodded. A boy walked up to the booth, indignant and annoyed.
Dave, what the fuck? I'm looking everywhere for you.
Shit, what time is it?
Dave said, exploding into action, gathering Walkman and jacket.
1:30 your ass is late,
the boy said, then looked at Daisy.
Hi, I'm Neil.
Sorry,
David said.
Neil Martinez, my roommate. This is Daisy, my friend.
Oh, you're Daisy,
Neil said, his smile turning up.
I've heard nothing,
David said, smacking the back of his hand against Neil's chest.
You've heard nothing.
What are you late for? Daisy asked.
String ensemble concert,
Neil said.
We're running lights.
And we're late,
David said, nudging Neil along.
Say goodbye.
Good meeting you,
Neil called over his shoulder.
Finally.
Shaking her head, Daisy continued playing with the ring another minute before it dawned on her David left without it, and his smokes, and his coffee. She drummed her fingers on the table, thinking, then gathered the smokes and ring into her pocket. She went to the deli and got an egg and cheese sandwich, topped up the coffee cup, and walked out of the campus center into the cold morning sunshine toward Mallory Hall. The theater was filled with the echoing bangs and clangs of chairs being set up on stage. In the glassed-in booth at the back of the house, David and Neil were organizing papers and equipment. Daisy tapped her fingernails on the door. Room service, she said, putting down the sandwich and coffee. David's head whipped around and he got to his feet, staring. She found herself smiling at his stance, knowing it was unconscious and ingrained. He was raised to stand when a lady came into the room.
And lost and found, she said, adding the ring and pack of cigarettes.
She glanced at Neil's interested expression and decided she didn't want to embarrass David any more than necessary. I bring food and friendship, she said in French. It's yours if you want it. He nodded with a closed-mouth smile.
I want it.
Ça y est. With a wave, she left the booth.
Gently back to yourself. Even when David was being an asshole, something always tapped the back of my mind and reminded me he was an orphan, Daisy said. He lost his parents. He was taken away from the home he loved, away from music and art and this magical childhood. He did show me pictures of his years in Belgium, and they broke my heart. I couldn't love him, but I wanted to be kind to him. Anyway, am I losing you?
No, Rita smiled. And it's not about my entertainment. I know. Where was I? Rita didn't answer. And by now, Daisy wasn't expecting her to. She sat and waited for her train of thought to circle back around, or for a new thought. So I reached a truce of sorts with David. Food was a thing with us. I'd bring him a snack or lunch, and we'd have a running gag about the tab and who owed who money. And his roommate Neil would call me Marge, and Dave would get possessive.
Hey, only I call her Marge.
So we had our bits and our jokes, and it felt like we were friends, or at least friendlier.
Must have been a relief.
Lucky moved in with me, and I loved having her for a roommate. We got along so well. Meanwhile, she and Will were having the mother of all affairs, but not in a way that was exclusionary. Sometimes I'd see these couples hook up and they'd get sucked into a black hole, drop out of sight for 3 weeks, and then emerge looking like they'd been on a bender in Vegas. Lucky spent a lot of nights at Will's suite. He had the single room, so they could be alone at night. But he'd also come hang in our room and sleep over sometimes. Her eyes turned to the wall, looked through the sable gray to the past. I liked when he did. How so? It made me feel included, and it was a different side of Will. He projected such an aura of self-confidence. It was interesting to see him tender and sweet and a little vulnerable. I'd watch him sleep, fascinated by how they held each other and how their breathing matched, his hand in her hair and her face in his chest. I was trying to imagine what it would be like, a boy sleeping with me, sharing my covers and pillows, breathing on me. Rita laughed. I'm sorry, she said, a hand to her mouth. I'm only laughing because I had the same moment in college. I liked Will being in the room. I trusted him so much as a partner, and it felt natural with him sleeping close by. Sometimes we'd all lie awake, talking in the dark before we fell asleep. Good night, John Boy. Good night, Mary Ellen. She ran her fingers through her hair, gazing back at the past again. In high school, you were never quite sure who was or wasn't doing it. In college, it was out in the open. People made and arranged and rearranged their sleeping conditions to suit them. Sex was everywhere, and I would watch Will and Lucky together, and it made me want. Her thoughts trailed off, and her eyes softened, remembering Will's tattooed arms crossed over Lucky's body. How small Lucky looked in his embrace. Lucky, whose mother told her she was fat. Will made her feel beautiful. Everything Lucky's mother found fault with, Will loved. Her body, her hair and her curves, her style and her manner, her thoughts and dreams. She said to me once, "It's like he's given myself back to me." She looked up at Rita. "I love that. Someone who gives yourself back to you." Rita leaned in her chair and trailed a finger along one of the lower bookshelves. She pulled forth a hardcover book and turned the front to Daisy. "The Collected Works of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. Have you read any of his work?" "Only The Little Prince." "He says essentially the same thing. Perhaps love is the process of my leading you gently back to yourself." Daisy took the book and ran her thumb across the page edges. "Can I borrow this?" "If you like." Daisy tucked it beside her. "Do you believe in love at first sight?" Rita smiled. "What do you believe?" "With Eric, it wasn't love. More like a knowing, a feeling. It was the start of Tech Week, when we go into the theater and set the ballets on the stage and do the lighting design. Sunday to Wednesday is tech. Thursday is dress, and Friday is opening night. I was bringing David a sandwich Sunday morning. I went into the lighting booth, and there he was. Eric?" Daisy nodded. He spun around in his chair and looked at me, and I looked at him, and it was immediate. She looked at Rita and smiled. "It's impossible to tell this story without sounding like a Hallmark movie. The truth is, I'd never believed in love at first sight. Love is built over time. It doesn't magically appear ready-made. And even connection at first sight, recognition at first sight, I don't think I believed in those either. But I walked into the booth, and the memory was like a looped movie clip. Eric turned around in his chair, turned again, and turned again. There he was. It was him. His name through her mind. A necklace out of love. A boy with dark blonde hair, dressed in jeans and work boots, sleeves of a dark blue t-shirt pushed up along his forearms, a pencil jiggling in the fingers of one hand.
"Yo, baby, what's up?" David said.
She looked at him, forgetting why she was here. The heat of the paper bag in her hand reminded her. "They didn't have the chicken parm. I got you the meatball sub.
As she handed the bag to David, she was conscious of her voice. How did it sound in the blonde boy's ears? She glanced at him. His eyes got a little bigger, his eyebrows coming down a hair. He looked away.
What are you doing walking around barefoot? David said. Marie will kill you.
The three of them looked down at her feet. Daisy hid one behind the other calf. David was right. She needed to get her shoes on. Too many sharp things littered the theater. She wasn't leaving until she knew his name.
Daisy, this is Eric. He's running your follow spotlight, so be nice to him.
Her mind folded like protective hands around the words. Eric. Be nice to him. She took the bag of food away from David and handed it to Eric. He smiled like the sunrise, mouth stretching to show his teeth, cheekbones lifting to narrow his brown eyes. Their color made her think of the honey her mother drizzled into a shot of cognac, the Bianco cure-all for head colds and heartache. Her heart ached with revelation. Looking at him, she felt an assembly within her body, as if she had lived up until this minute in 4 or 5 distinct pieces, each complete and content, but disconnected from the others. Now the pieces joined with a satisfying shift and click. Here, next to here, and this fit here. Yes. She pulled herself together. You, she thought. Leaving the booth, she should have been stumbling, because love, from what she heard, shoved you from behind, knocked you sideways, rocked and rattled you, but as she moved down the carpeted aisle, her forbidden bare feet were solid underneath her. Her mind felt fresh, like the first wide-open window of spring, letting in soft, damp air. Eric. The company gathered on stage. Down in the orchestra, David slipped into one of the rows, and Eric followed. She couldn't take her eyes off him. Every time she looked to where he was sitting, he seemed to be staring back. Not coyly or flirtatiously, not with David's direct hunger. He looked as thoughtful as she felt. They started the beret. Her feet danced. Her eyes stole glances into the audience. She felt him watching. Who are you? During a break, she came down off the stage and slipped into the row behind him, just over his right shoulder. His head turned a little, then a lot more. His eyes widened and his smile unfolded. Hey, he said. Hi. She crossed her forearms on the empty seat next to him. Further down the row, David and Case were bickering in Dutch, and Eric stared curiously at them while drinking a soda. She wanted to touch him. She wanted to kiss him. She asked for a sip, just so she could put her mouth where his had been. Their fingers touched when she passed the bottle back. She watched his hands take notes and twirl a pencil. His fingers, with their short clipped nails and ragged cuticles, scratched the back of his neck. He had a cut healing on one wrist. When he was thinking, he ran his left thumb along his fingertips, the nail whirring at the edge of a callus. Daisy's head tilted and her eyes squinted, calloused fingertips on the left hand. This boy played guitar. She stared. The lights picked up the fine golden hairs on his forearms. She looked frankly at his body, his legs in jeans, his feet in work boots. She studied the bit of gold chain peeking out of his t-shirt collar. She could pick up a scent from the back of his neck. Skin and soap, citrusy with a mint overtone. He passed her the soda again and smiled. Something flickered in his eyes, a courageous attempt to communicate the unknown. She could hear him think what she was wondering. Are you feeling this? Am I crazy? She must be crazy. Yet she felt so calm, filled with the strangest compulsion to lay her hand on the back of his head and stroke his hair, and the even stranger conviction that he would lean into her touch, not shy from it. She watched him all day, eyes and ears straining for anything he said or did. Eric. She threaded his name through her mind.
Fish. Leo Graham, the technical theater director, called from the wings. Come over here, I need you.
And Eric went.
Fish, catch,
David said later, and Eric caught the hank of cable tossed. Fish, Daisy thought. She didn't know what it meant or why he was called that. Asking David was out of the question. She sidled up by Allison Pierce, one of the female techs, an overweight girl with straw-colored hair and braids. Why do they call Eric Fish? She asked. I think his last name means Fisher, Allison said. In Norwegian or something, not sure.
Excuse us. Coming through, lady, step aside.
David was carrying the top end of a boom stand through the wings. Neil held the middle, and Eric brought up the rear, lugging the heavy bass.
How you doing, Marge?
Neil said in passing, his grin flashing wide.
Hey, David looked back. You don't call her Marge. I call her Marge. Inside joke.
Now Eric looked back. Marge? He mouthed. She rolled her eyes and shook her head.
He smiled, as if the joke was theirs.
She lay on her bed that night, hands behind her head, staring up at the ceiling. A vague confusion had closed a fist around the serenity of the day and squeezed everything into a tight lump. Within it, her thoughts smashed and stuck together. She didn't have a word for what she felt. She knew nothing but his name. Eric, she thought. Fish. Lucky breezed around, collecting clothes and her wash kit. Will this and will that and will something else. Daisy stared at nothing and made engaged noises.
Hey, Lucky said, coming to sit on the edge of the bed.
What's wrong? She was going to say nothing and let Lucky be on her way, but the words stumbled in her throat, leaving her staring open-mouthed at the ceiling.
Daisy, what happened?
I don't know, she whispered, managing a smile but